Blog Talk Radio.
We did an interview together once, didn't we?
Yes, we did. That's right.
But it wasn't quite the same. So welcome, everybody, to the Angie Bowie radio show. It's really exciting to be looking after it for her. She's in the Celebrity Big Brother house with her usual co-host, Rick Hunt. Angie's been telling me a lot about you, Rick. Yeah. She told me some fascinating stories, well, just some background about you and your Native American links.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yes,
is that correct, or did I get it wrong?
No, that's, you got it right. Both myself and my wife, Carolyn, are descendants from the Abenaki people, an Algonquin tribe in the northeast of the USA.
Okay, what are the, sorry to be ignorant, but what are the Abenaki people? It sounds like an alien race that comes to the table.
Well, the
Anunnaki, don't they? The alien race, the Anunnaki. But you're the Abenaki.
Yes, Abenaki. Mm-hmm. We are known as the Alnaba, which means people of the Dawn Land, and that name comes from the fact that here on the east, the sun rises first, and we are the people that greet the dawn.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's we've had a lot of political problems over the years, but we still exist, and people continue to thrive and make traditional art and. Yeah, we thrive. We thrive.
I was going to say, and that's where your art is. I can see a little bit of, you know, your inspiration in your art, the way you do your paintings, which are quite beautiful.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I get inspired by lots of different things, and one of the things that inspires me is music and musicians. I've always been, I guess I'm a frustrated musician, Tara, because I just simply love music, but I can't play an instrument and can't carry a tune.
Aww. that's
so I get
when
to...
you need someone to sing to you.
Yeah, but I get to hang out with all the musicians, so this is great.
No, it is. You're probably I don't know, you're a creative soul, so you've probably got the same temperaments of someone who's a musician anyway, or you know, a little bit up and down.
I think music and visual art are very, very much related. You know, I had read somewhere that Jimi Hendrix would compose music using color. I don't know if that's true or not, but what an interesting idea.
No, that is it's interesting you bring that up, because I met somebody who told me that Syd Barrett, he constructed a song out of colors. He turned sound into colours, and he made a load of paintings. It's a band in Argentina, actually, that are reconstructing this. So maybe we can get them on the show. And
that would be fun.
They can tell you the facts rather than me bullshitting. Oh, you're allowed on this show.
What's that?
You're allowed to use profanities on this show?
I don't see why not. We have before in the past.
Oh, that's right. I was going to say, so I think that's Jonah Louie on the phone. So.
Oh, good.
Hang on 1 second.
Sure.
Hello, Jonah. Hi. That's okay. We're on air now, so everyone can hear me.
I can hear you, but I can't hear Jonah.
Yeah, that would be the best. Let's just do it on the phone so we get to have a nice chat with you. Oh, fantastic. You found it. Great. All right. Yes, please do that. Fantastic. Try it now. Yeah. All right. Bye. Hello. This is
I'm
like reality
here.
Radio show, isn't it?
Yeah, usually Angie and my show usually is a bit of that.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
It sort of gives it a Warholian flavor.
It's funny, isn't it? We're so used to, like, with the internet, just being able to contact people across the globe. And then suddenly you just get stuck with these little technical hitches, but mm-hmm. It's all good. So
yeah.
Can we play Jana Louie's songs?
Why not?
Just show the world who he is. Jana Louie is an amazing songwriter, and you will all know him probably by this song. That was Jana Louie and Stop the Cavalry.
It was a
big hit in
number.
The UK. Do you recognize that song, Rick?
You know, I have to say I have not heard it before until yesterday.
Okay.
Actually.
It was
interesting.
Well,
I'm in the USA.
Actually. Yeah, well, talking to Jonah, I don't think it actually got released out there, which I'm really surprised about. So there's any... good record label out there that wants to release it in the US, get in touch. Because that song, it's probably every Christmas, you know, you have your Christmas songs that do really well, and that's actually one of them that we hear quite a lot in the UK.
Yeah, it's a pretty jaunty number.
Yeah. Definitely. So, are you missing Angie?
I miss Angie terribly. We usually have daily contact, some sort, and mostly because we're working on a number of projects together, which is very exciting. Books, events and an art show and book signings and so yeah. But I'm delighted that she is faring well on the show so far. From what I gather, I guess she's doing quite well, and that's good. I know that she went with a little trepidation. I've known for about 5 or 6 months that she was going to be doing this, and you know she had moments of being nervous, which I can certainly understand. But it looks to me, last couple of days, she's just going with the flow.
It's just lovely for the world to see the real Angie. Obviously, everyone hears about David, and Angie was very much a part of everything that happened back in the day. And it's just nice to for people to see what a colorful, beautiful woman she is.
I agree with you. And one thing, you know, I would underline is that, you know, Angie is certainly an artist in her own right. And that's one of the things I love about her is that, you know, she's her own person and she's a very strong, intelligent woman with a great sense of humor.
And she's seen so much and what that happened when it's almost like when Sally met Harry, but when Angie met David, you know, they created history.
Yeah, they sure did.
And it's a global history that the world enjoys. And you kind of wonder, oh, if David hadn't met Angie, would he have looked like the way he'd looked? Would he have written the songs he'd written? You know, would the fate of history done a different turn, and it would have, because our words are made up of our feelings and our thoughts, and you know, and that's how the creative process creates, isn't it?
I agree with you.
I love that they met, and I love that everything happened, obviously all the good stuff, and it's an honor and a privilege to know her, and like you say, she's her own woman, and with an incredibly high IQ, I hear.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because when we talk, you know, sometimes she'll stop and kind of trip over her words a bit, but it's because her brain is going so fast. She amazes me with what she comes out with ideas, and she really is a spectacular person. I adore her. I'm very fortunate to be friends with her. And of course, we've put out 2 books together so far.
Yeah. Can you tell me about the books? Because obviously we are Team Angie, aren't we?
yes.
Including maybe one other person. We are Team Angie. And I've been like, you know, going on all her Facebooks and, you know, seeing the books and seeing Catastrophe that she did with you. That was a book that you illustrated, isn't it? And she did the work.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a story about her cats, of all things. And I spent half a year drawing cats.
Wow.
but it came out really great. And that was our first project. And then I illustrated her poetry and lyrics that she collected in a volume, stuff that she'd written years ago, and I illustrated that, which was really fun because, you know, I could read her poetry and then just respond to it, and it was just we have this connection, she and I, creatively. Where sometimes, Tara, we'll be thinking of the same things. It's really quite interesting. You know, she'll call up and say, you know, I was just thinking of Silver Surfer or something, and I'm sitting here drawing it.
Well, that's the beautiful connection when two creative people, it's right for them to work together, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you just said, that's max of that, you know. So that's a beautiful synergy of, co-creating with somebody else.
And we have decided, you know, we've had many conversations, and we've decided that we're going to work together forever, quote unquote.
Aww.
We really, sometimes she'll call up and we'll be laughing about nothing for 45 minutes till our sides ache. You know, I get off the phone and like,
she's talented at that though, isn't she? That is what she does. When I saw her when she came to the UK, she's just tiny laughing. She's very empowered within herself.
She is.
And it gave me confidence. It really did. It was really good. Amazing.
Well, yeah, she's a lot of fun. Can I ask you a couple questions?
Yes, please.
Now, your band, The Duel, you've been around for quite a while, I understand.
Yes.
Now, do you are you doing any tours or recording or any new projects or?
Oh, how do I answer this? We had a little bit of sadness in our band, and it kind of stopped us in our track. And you know, you kind of think, oh no, you know, nothing must get in our way, and blah blah blah. We must soldier on. I must carry on and all that because you want to. But, you know, we've just had to reassess the way our band is. And like Andy's MS, last time I came on the show, I was all positive that he was going to get better. Maybe I just convinced myself, you know, that, you know, MS was something that you could, you know, make better. But actually, the people I spoke to, they were... You know, they all said to me, don't worry, he will get better. You can get prescription and he will be, it never goes away, but you learn to live with it. So we thought, okay, you know, he just needs 6 months or whatever time he needs to get to that stage. But really, his MS was found a lot later than, you know, he's had it for about 10 years or more. And so it's been undiagnosed all this time. And obviously the longer it's left, the harder it is to manage it.
Right.
So, and we're not a band that, you know, has a big budget when we go on tour. So we, you know, we don't eat a lot. People buy us drinks, that's great. And, you know, every penny goes towards paying for petrol and the driver and just getting to the next show. So, if we were to tour, you know, we would have to have a bit of support.
Right.
So it's a little bit sad. But the good news is they have got some new treatment that they're going to give him. It's a lot slower process than any of us thought. And the hardest thing, I think, with it all, it was that I actually, you know, tried to take Andy to the hospital and doctors many times, saying, you know, there's something not quite right, can you help? And every time it was misdiagnosed.
And then
when you've got MS and you've got, you know, something not quite wired right in your brain, and then you treat it with a medicine that you shouldn't, it affects you in a bad way. So The Duel has lived up to its name.
Wow.
But the beauty out of all the pain we've experienced is that, you know, we did a gig at the 100 Club on Monday and, you know, we couldn't have been happier. We just love what we do and we love our songs. We believe in our songs. We believe in our songwriting. And that co-creating partnership that Andy and I have is amazing. We literally write a song at the same time.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah, it really is. Huh. So
can
who
I
knows,
ask you?
Go on.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, please.
But do you, I'm just trying to get a sense of your creative process. Do you both sit down and say, we're going to write a song, or is it just spontaneous, or you write a snippet somewhere and then bring it someplace and then work with it? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, we've probably written, I was trying to work out how many songs we've written together, but it must be about 300. At least that we've got in DATs and on hard drives and
wow.
Really I've spanning over that whole period of time I would say we write in different ways. Sometimes I'll come up with a melody and a song and Andy will do the music, or sometimes Andy mm-hmm. does the music and I kind of make up a song over the top. Or my favourite, and I think what's been the most musically radical experiences, when we just do it at the same time. We literally go in, he just starts, with his beats, and I just start with my lyrics, and and then I might sing or he might do a bass line, and then the song forms. We've been known to write a song in half an hour, like fully finished.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow. That's,
I know, and it was a
great.
Really good song. We got really drunk. We watched the top 40. Oh my god, I think someone else is joining us. I'll tell you the story quickly, but yeah, we watched the top 40 best songs in the UK, and then we were so disgusted that we just thought, oh, we can do one better than that. And we wrote a great song.
I hear
you. I'll get it for you so you can hear it. Let's see if someone is here joining us. Hello.
Okay. Hello.
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 Is that
Tara?
Yes, it is. And Rick as well.
Rick?
Hi.
Yeah, it's Jonah Louis calling in to the States, I think. and I've just been trying Skype, and it's kind of all weird. So I'm on a mobile now, so... I think I dialed too many sixes. I went 666 at the end. And then I couldn't edit the six out. So I got out of Skype and went back in. And even then it didn't work. So it took me 5 minutes to find the dialing numbers as well.
Well, welcome.
We need a lot of support,
anyway.
Don't we, us artists? We need people around us. To,
I'm
going to
go into our speaker. Is that good? Is that,
try it.
Is that all right
you
for you?
Try it. Let's see what it will sound like.
Okay. I'm on loudspeaker. How is it for you?
It's not too bad.
I can hear you fine.
Distortion.
Is it worse?
Yeah, I can hear Jonah fine. Yeah.
Okay. And I can hear you good too. A bit better if it's on loudspeaker for me. But I don't mind. I'll just go back to the other way if it's not good for you.
No, that's cool. No, it sounds good.
All right.
Well,
is this
it's lovely
live radio?
This is live radio.
Is this live radio? Very live.
And I love what you both are wearing. You look terrific.
Very behind the scenes.
What I loved about, I was a little bit nervous coming doing a radio show for Angie with Rick, and I just felt really good that it was going to be you, Jonah, because we do have lovely chats on the phone when we do actually chat, so it's really nice of you to join us.
I was really chuffed that you sort of thought of me, it's nice to be on the phone with people you like,
Yeah, well, this show is very much... Angie and Rick's creation, and they love talking to mm-hmm. Credible musicians and artists mm-hmm. and you just came to mind.
Oh wow, you made my day.
And it's great to meet you, Jonah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I read that you a while back used to play piano for Arthur Big Boy Crudup.
Yeah, I did.
Wow, what was that like?
I was great because, well, it was just like first of all, playing with a legend, because he was the guy who had written a couple of songs that Elvis Presley had covered, My Baby Left Me and That's All Right Mama. And I was looking at the guy who wrote them and who first recorded them, you know, when I was playing piano for him as a kind of a boogie blues type pianist.
Wow.
And that was amazing. But what was also amazing was that we went down the pub after a couple of sessions. I did a whole album with him.
Wow.
And the album, and the name of the album was Roebuck Man, because he named the album Roebuck Man because we went into a pub called the Roebuck Pub in Tottenham Court Road in London, which is now no longer in existence. But when he was in there, he was very unhappy. And the guys that were running all this album thing that we were doing said, "Hey, Arthur, what's wrong?" And Arthur said, "Well, the guy at the bar is not serving me with drinks." And he thought, because he was black. And, of course, he came from a society in the Deep South where there was still pretty heavy segregation.
Right.
And I'd already known about a track, for example, by Big Bill Broomsey called Get Back, which actually wrote, you know, would sing about, if you're black, you're all, you know, if you're white, you're all right. If you're brown, stick around. But if you're black, oh, brother, get back,
oh,
get
wow.
back, get back. And one of the verses in that number that Big Bill Broomsey had written was, I went to a place one night, they was all having fun. They was all buying beer and wine, but they would not sell me none.
Oh,
and
wow.
that's just like Arthur Big Boy Trollope's experience in Tottenham Court Road in London, 20
wow.
years later, in 1969, thinking, you know, that it was the same over here as well as in the Deep South, you know,
in America. Oh, my God. That's intense.
Yeah.
Wow.
So your career, you've had such a fascinating career in music. Can you tell us how you got interested in becoming a musician in the first place?
Well, I suppose the funny thing is that, you know, talking about Arthur Big Boy Trollope, really, he was a blues guy, and the blues was something I really sort of fell for as a kid. I was 10 years old when my stepfather brought a Fats Domino album into the house.
Hmm.
And I was watching television in the other room, and he put it on in a room adjacent to the room I was in, quite quietly, but whatever it was I heard, I just could not concentrate anymore on the
wow.
television program I was looking at. And I later found out the guy was called Fats Domino, and he was like a, you know, a blues and boogie
wow.
New Orleans pianist. And a great voice, great vocals. And so it's things like the blues that I was attracted to, because in those days, that sort of music was very scarce in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
You know, parts of America were saturated in it. But in Britain, it was a real event if you heard something like that. And that's why when people heard a little bit of that in Britain, it meant something.
Wow.
No, I think I'm hearing my voice being repeated.
Yeah, the other thing is, it's just distorting a little bit. I'm just a bit worried
yeah.
that listeners won't be able to hear you.
Shall I go back to not loudspeaker?
Go back to not loudspeaker.
Yeah, okay. Right, I'm also going to...
Hello?
Oh, hello? Oh, I think he just cut himself.
Oh, no. Oh, so much for the Jimi Hendrix effect. Oy. Poor Jonah. Oh.
It's amazing, though, when you talk to him, where every time I've had, you know, the pleasure of talking to him, because we kind of live near each other, so it's just great. It's always, we always talk in music, and something really deep and meaningful always comes out of it. You know, sometimes you spend time with people and they make you feel inspired,
mm-hmm.
and some people
yes.
feel drained. He definitely is a very inspiring guy.
Yeah, I can just, you know, just the energy that I picked up from him now was, you know, I get a good sense of him. He seems like a pretty great guy.
Yeah, loves his music.
Well, we could sing It's All Right, Mama.
It's all right, Mama's on forever.
Or we can sing my hit song, Halo Over the Toaster. Terrible.
Brilliant. Well, I've actually got, the other challenge that I've got is that, because I've got Angie's laptop, so I'm doing everything from there.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to take any pens or computers or phones or anything into the house.
Right.
So I've got it, right. And I've uploaded all the Jonah songs, but four of them are still processing, and they've been processing for about 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Hello.
Hello.
Jonah Lewis?
Yeah, I pressed the wrong button. Sorry, guys.
Welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay, so all right, we've got another 23 minutes of the show. Let's ask some more questions. Do you want to ask one, Rick?
Sure. I had heard years ago you played piano for Arthur Big Boy Crudup. I'm sorry. No, stop.
I think we've been there, done that.
In all seriousness, let me ask you, are you touring now or working on a new album? I'm interested in hearing a little bit about your creative process, how you go about creating music and writing lyrics, if you're interested in talking about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I suppose I started out musically kind of thing as a piano player, really. And because it was a piano, when electronic pianos came in, and synthesizers, I also took an interest in them as well, and they provided different sounds. So you had a wider palette of sounds, and sounds were always of interest to me, as well as what it was you were playing. And sometimes the sound of something would influence the way you played.
Hmm.
So one creative process was driven by the sound of it, and not just the fact that it was notes.
Right.
It's what the sound was doing that made you play in a certain way that would allow the sound to breathe. So that was kind of one area of activity. And generally speaking, I think I would just play a bit like a jazz person would, which again is the blues, because like blues lies at the heart of jazz, etc., blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And because jazz is very extemporized and you make it up as you go along, that's what the blues was. And when you played the piano, you would just kind of make it up as you go along. Just like, you know, Tara might, or Tara's guitarist colleague, who would, I'm sure, just play guitar and end up with something he liked particularly, as I would. And then I would put that aside, and that would have become something I would remember. So I would actually be able to play it again. Whereas with jazz, and you throw a lot of things away, you know, when you improvise. But if there's something that particularly catches your ear, you might want to catch that or photograph it. And so it becomes part of a song then, because a song tends to be the same melody always, unless you kind of keep changing it. And and so that's another creative process, where you just kind of, you know, you play because you enjoy playing. But there might be something that comes out of your playing on a particular day, like a nice top line bit of melody, or this something out, or something else, or whatever. And then, of course, as you mentioned in your question about lyrics, and
mm-hmm.
you know, that's something else again. And that's it's really another world. And I tend to, if I write a song, I would tend to find myself writing a melody first, because it comes from my piano playing. And then after that, if I liked the melody enough in my own mind, I would try and scan a lyric to the melody rather than the other way around. There's no one way to do it, of course. And so, you know, I mean, Elton John would try and scan his stuff to lyrics written by Bernie Taupin. Someone else might scan their lyrics to someone else's melody. So there's no one way round, you know. And there's no one way of doing it. But that's another sort of process that I'm aware of in my own stuff. I would tend to write the melody first and then put lyrics to it. And so it's just what fits the line, really. Sometimes the line can be, you know, a line that can suggest other lyrics. And so you build up your lyrics in that way.
Now, do you end up writing, like, lines that come to you on bits of paper and just put them in your pocket and use them later? Or do you have a journal or do you just spontaneously write?
Yeah, I mean, there certainly is that. You know, you'll think of a line and you think, oh, yes, I must catch that. So you write it down so you don't forget it. Especially a line that if it fits the melody, because you're in the middle of writing a melodic piece, you know. And so you will make a note of that particular lyric line that fitted the melody perfectly. So I have books, as I'm sure we all do, of lots of ideas, lots of notes, lots of lyric ideas, so on and so forth. And also, you know, lots of music ideas that you can record on various devices. It used to be like tape, then cassette tape, and then you can do it on phones now, you know.
Yeah.
It's a file, you know, you bung onto a hard drive or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I'm always interested in people's creative process. I'm a visual artist, and I think there's a strong link between music and visual art. And I love talking to musicians about that. I saw a great picture of you, Jonah, that I loved. You were playing an accordion.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's similar. You play keyboards and piano, I understand.
Yes. And, of course, an accordion that you just implied there is the same kind of system, you know, black and white notes.
Huh.
And I, you know, came across this particular accordion in a junk shop in Kingston upon Thames in London. and, you know, it was between the wars, this particular model. Beautiful Italian accordion. And I didn't know how to play it, but I just thought, wow, it's a good price. It was £18, you know. And I got home and learned how to use it. And I was also influenced to get it partly because of the tradition of Louisiana Cajun Zydeco music.
Right.
Which is, again, you know, that tradition where, you know, the black guys got hold of that instrument, you know, as the Arcadians came down from Canada to Louisiana, pushed down by the British. And they started playing the white man's accordion, and they really, you know, got hold of it and really knocked some shit out of it. You know, they started playing rock and roll on the accordion 100 years ago. You know what I mean? And I was influenced to get the accordion partly because of that. I enjoyed playing it. Yeah.
Tell us about the new album that you're writing now. Are you able to talk about it?
Yeah. Well, it's a double CD, and it, you know, I will go with the CD format, so it's like a double album, man. You know,
A brand new song.
And in the main, it's pretty brand new. There's stuff that's it's brand new stuff, and some stuff I have written a while back but never recorded. I mean, I've still got stuff I've written like 30 years ago that I still haven't committed to the recording studio, just because I have written a lot of stuff, you know, and I've yet to record some of those things. But there's there's a material for like a double CD album, and I hope to have it finished. Some of it's already mastered, actually, so I'm making fairly good progress, and I would say by April it should be finished, the recording of it.
Wow.
And,
so soon,
you know,
that's great.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It is.
Going forward, yeah.
Wow.
And a double CD, that's amazing. I mean, that thing you said, oh, you know, you've written songs that you haven't committed to the studio. It's like a relationship. But sometimes it takes someone else to listen to some of your stuff for them to go, oh, my God, that song is amazing. Whereas you might have written it thinking, oh, it's not that good and I don't like it because of this, that and the other. And sometimes another ear will give your music more credit than you do sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I think that other people are very valuable, especially when you're in the recording process, because the recording process is very repetitive and you're working on a track, say, for a week and you hear it like 1,300 times or whatever, you know, and someone comes along and even if they become involved in the track and add one little bit, you know, bar 17 of the fourth verse, you know, you think, wow, it's brought your thing to life again because it's someone else's worldview or someone else's universe that's gone into that. And so working with other people is very valuable, and other people's ideas. If you've worked on something, say, for 3 months and you're kind of happy with it, my voice is repeating again. Is it okay?
It's not repeating here, but I know it's really annoying if it's happening to you.
I'll just ignore it then, if it's okay at your end. And then you played for, you know, you've worked with it for, say, 6 weeks or something, and then if you play it to someone else, you actually listen to it in a different way. You're almost more critical, you know, because you're hearing it from their point of view. So other people are really important in the whole process. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And then even then when you perform it live, you're hearing it again in another way. Again, I love what you said about letting sound breathe earlier on. I thought, really quite beautiful. Yeah. Someone that understands music. So can you just let us and our listeners know, we are kind of, because I did a gig at the 100 Club celebrating 40 years of punk this year, you actually got signed by a punk label, didn't you? Can you just tell us a little bit how your career kicked off and, you know, and your link to the punk scene as well?
I sort of, you know, careers kind of go up and down, and I'd kind of been up it for a while, and then it went down, and then I got a call from Stiff Records to say, come into the offices, please, we want to sign you up. And so this was, and they were kind of, as you say, Tara, a punk, initially a punk label, the very first punk record to chart in the UK was actually a record that was released by Stiff Records, and it was The Damned singing New Rose. So they were heavily involved in that kind of punk period, and for different reasons I was asked to become part of their label, which was, I was really pleased about that, obviously, because it gave me a chance again in my career to go forward. And
who were your contemporary artists that were on the label at the same time as
on Stiff Records at the time? That there were people like Lena Lovitch and Reckless Eric, Elvis Costello and Ian Dury, Nick Lowe, all those kind of people. Some of them, I think, made some mark in the States. I think particularly Elvis Costello. I think he had an album out there called King of America. I'm not sure. Or My Aim is True, at least. And, it was heady times, really. And it was a great new urgency in the music scene, because there was the great urgency of the 50s, which kind of broke all ranks from previous popular forms of music in the white markets around the world, and the punk thing in a way broke ranks as well. It had the same spirit, you know. I think Never Mind the Bollocks is a great landmark in music. It's terrifically produced, Chris Thomas there guiding the guys, and just as there were great landmarks in the 50s and 60s, actually. So anyway, I joined Stiff Records, and that was a good help to my career.
That's Wait. Interesting.
I must say, I don't know. Can I just say, incidentally, that thanks to you, Tara, I did a great gig there at the Madame Jojo in Soho, London, because you were running that place, and you had me on there, and it was really good fun.
I loved it. And you played Rebellion Festival, didn't you?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Again, thanks to you. Suggested I played there, and I did, and that was a punk festival, wasn't it?
Yeah, Well, you're very loved on the punk scene. I know, we've got keyboards in our band, and some punk people hate keyboards, and, you know.
Yeah.
And you're like, and they're like, oh, if you're a punk band, then you shouldn't use keyboards, and, you know, and there's all this rubbish. But, so it's great to, I just love music, and it was just great for people at Rebellion to hear what you were doing, because you are such a great songwriter. And I'm
really
looking forward to hearing your album.
Oh, thank you. I think really, as you say, it's just better to be open and not have these little ghettos of music sprinkled around all over the place, because they're all interrelated anyway, and there are essential threads that go through all the different genres. The best forms of music, I think, really have their roots in kind of roots. You know, they're roots in like folk, the folk themselves, the people doing it themselves from the grassroots upwards, and it has that ethic, that spirit, and that magic, you know, that I think has found its way into genres like rock and roll and punk, you know.
Any genre that's not, you can't control music, really, can you? Once you start doing that,
No. You
just start losing the spirit more and more and more. And then...
Yes.
Yeah, then you can hear music, but you're not listening to it.
I think it's good to not get ideological, for example, in music, to create sort of false barriers and not worry if you're finding yourself going into areas where you maybe would have thought, oh, that's not my cup of tea at all. But, you know, just to have an open mind, I think, really.
Just be open, like and free. I was thinking of, I don't know if you've seen it, Jonah and Rick, the film about Ray Charles's life.
Yes, I did.
You maybe have.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rick.
You have?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, when I watched that, it's had a real effect on me musically, because it's made me kind of think of sound as an extra sense that's more powerful than, you know, my eyes. And it's just a bit where Ray Charles never used a walking stick, because he was so in touch with sound around him, with the way his shoes clicked on the floor, and he was so in touch with that he didn't ever use a walking stick, because he was so close to sound. And that, I'm kind of fascinated with, you know, being close to sound and really hearing it in a new way. And I'm still a bit fascinated by sound breathing, Jonah.
Well, it is important, especially if you're making records, because you have more of a chance to sort of sit back from a distance and kind of view it almost like you're doing a movie as opposed to doing a play. Because a movie, you know, you're recording it. A play is gone forever after the showing, as is a gig. But, you can still have opportunities to get into the sound at a gig, the way you do it, and the play as well, you know, to get into the more breathing of it all. But, you know, the very genre of filmmaking and record making allows a bit more of that, I think, to happen, and you can, you know, view it more a little bit more, sort of, you know, it has to withstand repeated listenings, if you like, in that genre, because people see movies again and they'll listen to records again, but you can't listen to a live gig again. It's a one-off. That has its own magic and its own attraction, but, you know, so they're kind of different. As Elton John, I think I mentioned him earlier on, he once said that live and recording, they're different kettles of fish, and I suppose they are.
Yeah, because I guess when it's live, you move with the crowd, don't you?
Yeah.
A bit more. You hope to, anyway.
Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, you're a great mover, actually. You work so well with the crowds, you know, and the movements and the passion, the energy. It's terrific.
Thank you. So your new album, does it have a name yet? Or is it a working title?
It sort of does, but it's not certified, so I won't mention it.
Okay. Brilliant. Yeah. And do you have any, are there any tours planned, or have you got any plans to, you know, take the album live around the world anywhere?
Well, the thing is that, you know, we were talking about live and recorded, and the two in the end meet. And so, you know, once it is out, I will start to be open to doing all sorts of gig things that come up. I will say yes to lots of things and try and help with the profile of it to help promote it, you know. So even though I won't necessarily be doing exactly what's on the record, you know, it'll be live, but it'll be just a way of putting my name about a little bit as much as I can to help generate any possible interest in the album, you know.
And what spurred you to keep doing what you do? What do you think it is?
Sorry, Tara?
What spurs you to keep, you know, writing new music and new songs, and what is it that drives you?
Oh, yeah. I just love doing it. I mean, I enjoy the creative process. So the actual playing of an instrument is kind of stress reducing and stress relieving, and it takes you into another world, you know, where you shut down on lots of things otherwise that maybe would irritate you. So you get into all that. It's a nice, juicy form of escape. And, you know, so that's one reason why I like to do it. It's a bit like having an interest or a hobby. You go out there and play tennis or something, and, you know, if you get into the game, you're, again, focusing on something that takes you away from all the crap in life, you know. So it's just a nice thing to do.
That's fantastic. Rick?
It is.
Sorry, I hope I haven't been hogging.
That's quite okay. I'm enjoying listening. This is great. I love having a dialogue about how you both approach music as an art form. And there are some similarities. You know, I'm a visual artist. So, you know, you were talking earlier about, you know, putting a song out there. And, you know, maybe you're feeling lukewarm about it, but somebody else is taking it and going, wow, I love this. And the same thing happens with visual art, you know. I mean, I can draw something and it's like, yeah, I did that, yeah. But somebody will see it and go, oh, my God, you know, I just love this. This connects with me somehow. And sometimes it's connected to the person on a meaning that I had no intention of, you know, putting into the picture.
The stream told me we've got 30 seconds left. Does that mean it's going to stop recording?
Probably.
Rick?
Probably. Oh, we got 30 seconds.
I just want to say
real quickly, thank you, Tara, for picking up the ball with me on the show. And thank you, Jonah, for being our guest.
Oh, that's great, Rick. And thanks for talking about being transported in with regards to sound and vision, and vision in particular there. That was very interesting.
Well, I hope I can talk with you again sometime.
That'll be great.
Okay.
Yep.
This has been
fantastic.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tara.
Okay,
do we just end it now? Because I think it's...
Yeah,
oh,
we'll
okay.
just throw our sombreros up in the air and say goodbye to everybody.
Oh,
thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.
Oh, thanks for listening. Okay, all right. Later, Jonah. Thank you.
Thanks, Tara. Are we done?
I think it stopped recording.
Be sure to try the veal.
Yeah, I'm going to have to learn it in a minute. We'll have to get you back when Angie's back as well, Jonah, just so that you get a
yeah,
proper.
Yeah, will. That would be wonderful.
Brilliant. Okay.
Well,
all right.
Thank you,
everybody. I'm going to go and pick up the technical piece.
Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you, Rick. And thanks, Tara. But you maybe speak soon, Tara, yeah, in the UK?
Yeah. No, I'll give you a call afterwards.
Yeah, Brill. Okay. And thank you, Rick. Thank you very
You're
much.
You're welcome.
And thank
Peace
you
out.
All.
Bye-bye. Okay.
I want to thank my mother.
Yes.
No.
Thank you.
And all the cats in the world.
Okay.
Right. So.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
He's gone. Hello.